Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's April the 25th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock out of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along, too, with all the day's agricultural news, including these stories. The president is headed to Camp David. He'll discuss beef trade with Japan's prime minister there. Congress is expected to approve the South Korean-U.S. trade agreement. And agronomists say the Easter weekend freeze killed corn in five southern states. And then we'll hear a combine report from Brazil. Phil Corzine of South American Soy will join us a bit later in the program. Also, don't forget today that Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, he'll join us just after the bottom of the hour. Chief meteorologist to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather around the globe. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Want to review something you heard on the Closing Market Report? Then AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts are for you. Get all our ag programming delivered daily to your computer. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the red podcast link in the right navigation window. Follow the simple instructions and you will never miss a Closing Market Report again. You can also subscribe to the pre-opening and opening market reports and our flagship show, Commodity Week. AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts. It's your marketing advantage.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. May contract in the wheat pit at 5.06 and a quarter, up 22 and three quarters this afternoon. July futures 23 cents higher for the harvest month for the soft red at $5.20 and a half. September contract 5.27 and a half a bushel, settled 21 and a half cents higher. May corn futures at 3.71 and a quarter, up 10 and three quarters. July 3.81 and three quarters, up 10 and a half. And December contract 7 cents higher at 379 and one half. May soybean futures 11 and three quarters higher at 721 and a half. July at 737 and three quarters, up 11 and a half cents. And your harvest month November's at 764 and a half, up 11 and a quarter on the afternoon. May bean meal at 192.60, up $1.70. May bean oil 86 cents higher at 32.70. From the Mercantile Exchange, April feeder cattle at 106.85. They're off 25 for the afternoon. April live cattle over at the Merc 96.95, 5 cents higher. And June futures were 2.5 higher, 100 weight at 92.32.5. May lean hogs at 76.22.5 were 37.5 cents higher. From the outside markets, crude oil trading the nearby June at $65.80 a barrel, up $1.22, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average new highs at 13,088. They're up just about 134 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, and I know in the outside markets, is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Well, which did you like more, the action in Chicago or the action in New York today, Paul?
Well, I have to sum it up that there's enough money in New York and Chicago for all of us, Todd. It was a good day. From the word go, and of course, you know, our listeners, there's more people out there that have investments in the stock market, so it's good. And but the investments in the Midwest here at the corn, soybeans, and the wheat all acted extremely well as well. And we did break the historic level in the Dow, which means that things look pretty darn good in the world economy.
I was talking to Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist, here before I came on the air, and he was showing me the weather patterns and rainfall overnight. It looks like you and the folks to the south of you didn't quite get nearly as much rainfall as those to the north of us. Here, my hometown, about 6 tenths, and then Leroy, I think, got pounded maybe with an inch or maybe closer to 2 inches. Anybody running in the field where you are?
Not sure south of us here, Todd, but, you know, Farmer City, an inch and three quarters, Watseka, 2 inches, and the private people are basically talking about a pretty wet weather forecast for, you know, parts of Indiana and Ohio, and definitely the word delay in some of those headlines, as well as May the 4th or 5th is basically the cutoff date for a lot of the Dakota corn getting planted, and we're rapidly approaching that point in time. So there's a lot of excitement, and the weather forecasters are basically, at least the one I have the most confidence in, talking about a pretty good rain event for May the 5th and 8th, 6/10 to an inch, 8 across the belt.
Is this the reason we have the 10-cent jump in the nearbys at this point in the 7 in the December, just a weather market on its own for the corn, or is it following the wheat up, and is that weather market actually not here but someplace else around the globe?
I think it was a combination of the strength in the wheat market, and also it's based a lot on the weather situation in Russia. The overnight wheat markets in the Paris wheat market and is quite excited. It's very dry in the Ukraine, parts of Europe, and we're also seeing parts of China in the wheat country being a little bit on the dry side. Australia it does have some rain in the forecast, but wheat and the smaller wheat acreage in Canada were all factors to that market. And, of course, the corn was also very strong, and one issue that we did talk about in the early session today is that wheat probably is not a feed grain anymore, and there'll be less wheat being fed to livestock, and therefore the corn demand will also be better. And you can also auger that statistical analysis in the world as well. If wheat's not a feed grain, then we have to use more of the cereal grains for feed.
When you take a look at the trend, are we still at the point on your trend that corn is down and we have to yet make some gains before you turn that to the upside?
Yes, and corn's taken a terrific beating. It would take probably a trade in the $3.95 to $4 area to turn the computer bullish in corn. The soybean complex is still on the downside. Our general opinion is that we have to focus on two things. We have to basically make the market realize that we haven't lost demand, and we also have to bring into the marketplace somewhere along the line an 88 million acre planted number. And this could come in the form of two things, either a reduced yield or possibly some acreage like in the Dakotas not planted. And when I, at our company meeting, annual meeting, I always like to talk to our friends in the Dakotas. And, you know, they like short season corn, and they like to get it planted on time. And they're very strict. When things don't cooperate, we go to plan B and C. And, you know, it's been very successful. They do like the rotation, corn, wheat, and soybeans, but if they can't get it planted early or the right seed, they go to plan B.
Is Paul Cooley in the camp of neutral to friendly at this time?
Well, a couple things. We over here in East Central Illinois and my customer friends, we are seeing a lot of fertilizer and a lot of corn being planted. And, you know, it's an eye-opener. Obviously, the farmer is seeing the dynamics and economics of planting corn to the extent that I'm a little bit surprised of. Also, our friends tell us that they also planted a lot in the Kentucky in the South. The factor that we're seeing is a lot of the wheat in southern Illinois, I'm getting mixed results, but a lot of people are going to the soybean side of the equation on the replant of the wheat. The general feeling is that I am amazed that like in Mississippi, it's hard to sell corn in the feed market. It's hard to sell Mississippi new crop corn in the export market because of the aflatoxin issue. One way these the farmer in the Mid-South is gearing up to handle more corn is buy a couple more hopper-bottom semi-trailers and try to move it that way. So it's going to be kind of a clumsy process of getting that corn to market.
Paul, always fun to talk with you.
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons at the bottom of the hour. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City should join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, here at the radio station, says tonight across the two-state region, cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Most of those will be in the south. Lows will range from 40 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 62 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, some more showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs from 52 in the north, the northern parts of Illinois, that is, to 74 in the far south. The extended forecast, scattered showers will continue Thursday night into Friday. Total rainfall over the next few days generally will range between 1 and 3 inches, with the heaviest amounts in Illinois and across many portions of Indiana. Dave Dickey is here now with the news.
In agricultural news, President Bush and Japan's Prime Minister are expected to discuss U.S. beef trade issues Friday at Camp David. In a letter to the president, 24 U.S. senators called on President Bush to press Japan for full resumption of U.S. beef imports, including cattle older than 20 months. The letter says congressional patience is wearing thin and that, quote, sound science, international trade rules, and the Japanese consumer all demand that U.S. beef and beef products achieve full access to the Japanese market without delay. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
My letter urges the president to push for Japan to remove the unnecessary restrictions it's placed on the importation of U.S. beef. We want all the beef to come in that we're entitled to get in there under the scientific determinations of their safety, as well as the requirements of the World Trade Organization.
Next month, the World Organization for Animal Health, or OIE, is expected to make its preliminary classification of the U.S. as a controlled risk country for BSE. Washington insider sources predict that Congress will approve the pending South Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. The FTA is especially positive toward U.S. beef, pork, and poultry. Agronomists today say emerging corn was damaged or killed by the Easter weekend freeze in Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Kentucky. Agronomists are predicting reseeded fields in those states will be susceptible to yield loss due to unavailability of top-producing seed. Hundreds of thousands of pounds of meat products have been recalled in two separate cases after reports of E. coli illnesses. The recalls include over 100,000 pounds of beef products by a California company and a 250,000 pounds by a Pennsylvania company. The recalls surpasses the total beef recalls for E. coli for all of last year. The recalls come as USDA's Food Safety Inspection Service is under fire for proposing changing the way it inspects meat producers. FSIS wants to spend less time at plants with good records and more time at troubled facilities. A Purdue agricultural economist says U.S. consumers will pay more for food in 2007. Chris Hurt says demand for corn and soybeans may push food inflation this year beyond 3.5%.
Food in the past couple of years has had a lower inflation rate than the general inflation rate. Now, what at least I'm looking at for 2007 and probably 2008 is that with this 1% to maybe at the outside a couple percent increase in the inflationary rate relative to what we've had, we're going to see the food inflation perhaps ticking back above and actually leading the general inflation rate a little bit higher. So I think food has a bigger importance in the inflation equation this year than most years in the past.
Hurt says USDA's Economic Research Service is projecting substantially higher farm-level prices for eggs, milk, and cheddar cheese. But for beef and pork, Hurt says the ERS is only expecting modest increases. and three companies have joined together with a plan to build an electric plant in Illinois that will produce green energy from soybeans. The joint venture will use a process they claim will produce three times more fuel per unit of feedstock over other processes currently in common use. The plant will be built in Princeton. It will use up to 40 tons of soybeans per day per reactor. The plant has a power production target of 100 megawatts. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. One of the things you'll find there today is a brand new interview, a lengthy one, about 30 minutes, with Phil Corzine of Assumption, Illinois, a farmer there who also happens to farm in South America through a company called South American Soy. You can find out more at southamericansoy.com. Phil called in via his computer and Skype this morning. We had a long discussion with him. We'll bring you just about 4 minutes of that conversation up next. What's the longest property that you've had in production, and what kind of yields do you have out of it compared to maybe some of the newer properties? And none of it's very old at this point.
Right, yeah. Our third-year soybeans, we've had the farm we bought. We bought our first farm was 2,500 acres. We call it Nova Frontera 1, and that's actually where the area we're developing as well. But there was about 100 hectares or 250 acres that had already been opened. And so we had soybeans there this year, third-year soybeans, and they were about 45 sacks per hectare, which is around 40, 41 or so bushel per acre if you convert it. So soybeans were, you know, pretty pleased with the yields. We had some dry spells and were a little delayed at planting, but overall it was a pretty good crop for us on our third-year soybeans. We were pretty happy with that. Didn't have rust. We haven't had rust for, I guess, a couple of years now.
What type of soybeans are you growing at this point? You're pretty close to the equator. You're not very far. How far is it? Do you know?
Well, you know, I don't know in miles. We're at 12 degrees is where the farm is located.
Yeah,
12
so degrees, zero would be the equator. So you're very
right,
close.
So if I knew
twice as close as the south of the United States of the border. The
yeah, you know,
the
they've people have asked me, you know, Brazil, where's it? How's it compared to the United States? And I mean, we would be way far. I mean, we're there's nothing in the United States in terms of the comparison. You know, latitude to latitude, we're down by, you know, I think Jamaica or further south than mm-hmm. that. Even so, it's very warm here. In fact, most of us would say it's hot. It's in the 90s all year round, and it's a very warm place to grow beans. We grow a variety. It's a public sort of a public variety, I guess you'd say. Embrapa developed it many years ago, and it's called Sambaíba, which is a native name, and it's just a public variety. And they use it typically for newer fields, newer, you know, areas. I can't tell you exactly what the trait in it that works well on new soybeans, new areas, but I'm assuming it's, you know, can a soybean that can deal with fertility problems and things like that. Because when you start out, the pH on these soils is in the middle threes maybe, so you know, it takes quite some time to really get that up, and when it's so low, and then it's low throughout the profile, it takes a while to get the whole profile neutralized. And then while it's in that stage, you know, you have a lot of deficiencies, and we use a lot of the fertilizer formulations down here all have micronutrients, and they're all custom, pretty much a custom order from the agronomist based on what your exact situation is in your field.
How are the expenses compared to the United States?
Higher. The input costs are higher here. The land cost is a lot cheaper, and in fact, it doesn't even hardly, you know, there's no comparison. But on the input costs, we're higher. We typically are in the, you know, maybe around $180 to $200. I think on this this last crop, our production costs were around $180 an acre, but they'll be higher next year. We were able to get by this year without using any
lime and gypsum. They use a gypsum on the early years, probably the first couple years, first couple crops, because that really immediately lowers or raises the pH so that you can get it in the production area. And so you use a gypsum, and it's just applied right ahead of planting in just the top couple inches of soil. And that's done after the lime application has already been made. So you do all that to try to get things, into balance, but it all adds up on your costs. So when you have the lime, which, of course, depending on where you are, the freight costs are significant. For us, lime freight costs are pretty much the same as our purchase costs. So we spend, in reals per hectare, I think we spend around 75 reals a hectare to put lime on, and I don't know what that is offhand in dollars per acre, but overall we spent about last year $180 an acre. I think this next crop will be more in the mid $200 range by the time we get the gypsum and the lime, but probably there'll be a year of that, and then the cost will start to go down. After 2 years of lime application on the new areas, you can typically drop it off, and for instance on our older areas, we're applying just about 500 kilograms per hectare of lime, whereas on the brand new area, we're putting on about 3.3 metric ton per lime of lime per hectare on that area.
That was Assumption, Illinois farmer and general manager of South American Soy, Phil Corzine. He joined us via Skype, that's on the computer, from his farm in Tocantins, South America. You can find out more about South American Soy at southamericansoy.com. And remember, you can always visit our website at willag.org for the whole half-hour interview with Phil Corzine.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us to take a look at the cash grain market for the day. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
First, tell me about rainfall in your area, please.
We had probably from 2 tenths to 9 tenths, just depending on where you are. But we did have a little rain, but it's just having trouble materializing in this area again. So right now we're kind of okay. If it didn't rain anymore, they could probably run in some places tomorrow.
And they probably will if it doesn't rain, but I'm guessing that it may materialize. We'll see how that works out overnight. How are the prices and basis holding up in your area?
Well, since the farmers have been busy trying to get in the field, rail values have probably improved from 3 to 5 cents since we talked last week. So they are getting better. Bean basis values as well. New crop, it just looks like it might be trying to get a little better at some of the processor levels, but train values haven't responded. But the farmer's just not hauling very much. We had a little activity today since it was raining and the markets were up. Guys called in and sold some stuff off DP and some for 30-day delivery. But, the market improved a little bit today, basis-wise and the board.
And what did you make of the board trade today?
Well, you know, we drove it too low. There was some technicals in there, and, you know, we just got too cheap, I think, for a while. But there's no doubt the weather has a lot to do with it, because Iowa and Nebraska just absolutely got hammered, you know. And then, of course, you know, some of these weather people are changing things next week, saying we're going to have some more rain starting the middle of the week, so things look a little bit wetter. So I think it was just a combination of the weather and the fact that we drove it too low, and they just wanted to buy the market again.
You know, I didn't talk about it with Cooley, but the ranges were a lot higher today than the settlements were. So the range on the wheat July was up at 527.5 on the top, the bottom at 502, and they settled at 520.5. But in the corn, they had a top of in the December 392, a bottom at 77. And they settled closer to that bottom than they did the top. Does that make much of a difference to you?
It's a little scary because, you know, when we were trading limit up, just the first three options were really wanting to trade limit, and you'd see the B go away, and you'd know it was a trade, and the B'd come back. You just almost had a feeling it probably wasn't going to last. let me just say this. I'm just leery enough that if I bought quite a bit this afternoon, I'd sure protect it overnight because it really can't be trusted.
All right. And your bids for the day?
All right. Cash corn, 351. Cash beans, 686. And new crop wheat, 426.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens on Wednesday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner about the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A judge has ordered a new trial, a third one, for a Champaign man charged with a 2004 home invasion. Patrick Thompson claims the charges were politically motivated. A jury found him guilty last July, but Judge Harry Clem ruled that Thompson's attorney didn't properly represent him. Thompson's new attorney wants the charges to be dropped. The two sides will be in court next month. Federal authorities have charged an Iowa machinist with sending dud pipe bombs and threatening letters to investment companies in Denver and Kansas City. The case involves threatening messages signed by the bishop. Investigators say the letters threatened recipients if the prices of certain stocks didn't move to certain levels. John Tompkins of Dubuque, Iowa, was arrested on his way to work today. The letters were postmarked from suburban Chicago. The Illinois House has overwhelmingly approved a bill meant to keep government contracts from being handed out based on political contributions. Illinois has a reputation as a so-called pay-to-play state, where companies that want a share of government business are expected to donate money to key officials. The legislation would apply to people with more than $25,000 worth of state contracts. They'd be barred from giving contributions to officials responsible for awarding the contract. The measure also requires people bidding on contracts to disclose any past contributions. Comptroller Dan Hines says it sends a clear message that state government isn't for sale. The measure now goes to the state Senate. Indiana lawmakers are working on compromise legislation that would require almost everyone in the state to buckle up in cars, SUVs, and pickups. By requiring seatbelt use in pickups, Indiana would be eligible for nearly $16 million more in additional federal money for highway safety programs. The House voted for the bill earlier this session after making several changes, but the Senate stripped out those amendments before advancing the bill. An honor guard of volunteer motorcyclists is taking part in funeral services for a soldier from Champaign County. Members of the Illinois chapter of the Patriot Guard gathered this morning to accompany Private First Class Lucas Starcevich's body from Willard Airport to a funeral home in Savoy. The funeral is set for Friday. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City usually joins us on Wednesday afternoons to take a look what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade, at what happened in the agricultural weather. Of course, it had a big impact on the Chicago Board of Trade today. He's not available this afternoon. We do have our own Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist here at the radio station's weather forecast. We'll go through that for the day. He says tonight, cloudy with some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will be most numerous in the south. Lows will range from 40 in far northwestern Illinois to 62 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, some more showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow from 52 in northern Illinois to 74 in the south. The wind speeds tomorrow 10 to 20 miles an hour with relative humidity ranging between 60 and 80% on the minimum side. The extended forecast for the two-state region, Illinois and Indiana, scattered showers will continue Thursday night into Friday, says Ed. Total rainfall over the next few days will generally range between 1 and 3 inches, with the heaviest amounts in Illinois and across many portions of Indiana. Dry and warmer weather expected this coming weekend. Unseasonably warm weather is expected much of next week as well. Scattered showers and thunderstorms may return during the middle of next week, with more widespread showers and thunderstorms possible. That'll be Friday into the weekend. Be sure to go to our website at WILLAG.org for complete information from Ed Kieser. Click on the weather button up at the top of the page. And don't forget that you can always hear the weather and the analysis right there under the market audio section of the WILLAG.org homepage. That's willag.org. Don't forget also you can subscribe to our weekend newsletter. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.